When it did, she withdrew her hand from the drawer. In it, she held a .38 special stainless steel revolver and shot him, point blank, twice through the chest. She rolled out from under him, dropped the gun on the floor, grabbed her phone off the bedside table, ran down the stairs, out the front door, and dialed 911. A female deputy for the Northern Virginia County Sheriff's Department was consoling her when Sheriff Jake Corum, investigator Samantha White, and a heavyset detective walked out of the Georgian-style mansion with its 6 20-foot columns down the sloped lawn, past rippling fountains, to expansive gardens where the pair stood silhouetted by flashing blue emergency lights.
"You holding up okay, Mrs. Tate?" the sheriff drawled, putting a reassuring hand on her shoulder, tilting back his signature wide-brimmed off-white Stetson, and bending over so he could look her in the face. She was fighting back tears, eyes red and watery, nostrils leaking, a heavy blanket draped over her back.
"I don't know,"
she said between whimpers, and wiped her nose with the back of her hand, the blanket sliding from her shoulders to reveal a blood-stained lace negligee. A cold rain had fallen earlier in the evening, and the air was chilled, the ground wet, her slippers soggy, mud-caked.
"I think so. Is he dead?"
she asked, and closed the blanket back around her neck.
"Oh, yeah. He's dead, all right, Mrs. Tate," the sheriff assured her. "Business end of a .38 at that range does the trick every time. One round would have gotten the job done." "Mrs. Tate," the detective asked, "you call anyone else after dialing 911?
"My husband, Jeff. He was on his way back from a business trip in Europe. His jet should have landed by now."
The detective nodded his tree stump of a head knowingly.
"That's what I would have guessed, Mrs. Tate," he said. "That's what most people would do in a situation like this, I suspect. Call a loved one or spouse if they're married. That's what I'd have done, called Patsy."
"You get a hold of Mr. Tate?"
"No, he didn't answer his phone."
"Figures."
"Why's that?"
she sniffled. The burly detective swept his eyes over the manicured gardens, stone paths, statuary, tennis courts, koi ponds, and said,
"Mr. Tate, he's lying up there on your bedroom floor, 2 slugs through his breadbasket. You killed your husband, Mrs. Tate."
She wailed and collapsed.
"Your bedside manner needs work, detective,"
the female deputy spat angrily, struggling to support the slumping body, as Mrs. Tate's dog, a cockapoo with little red ribbons pinned to its ears, ran laps around her legs, yapping incessantly.
"Careful now, deputy. You're holding on to what just might be the world's richest woman,"
the detective said over the dog's barking, and tucked a pinch of Copenhagen tobacco in his lower lip.
"And somebody better muzzle that goddamn mutt before I shoot it."
Chapter 2. March 17th. He hated crowds and preferred to work behind the scenes, undetected. But tonight was different. It was important he stood out, be seen. The Georgetown bar was packed and noisy with St. Patrick's Day revelers, and he had already bought the house 1 round of drinks to celebrate. 2 drunk brunettes in matching short green skirts and sequined tops had him hemmed in as he stood facing the rowdy gathering, back to the bar, elbows propped up against the railing. The heavier of the two flashed him a green thong she was wearing under her skirt. The other pulled him closer and whispered in his ear,
"I don't own green panties, so I'm not wearing anything at all."
She belched softly in his face and giggled. Her breath smelled like licorice. He remained in the bar for another 15 minutes, settled his tab, and ordered up an Uber, but not before buying a 2nd round of drinks and engaging in some heavy petting with the 2 females, running a fleshy hand up the skirt of the pantyless one, while the